Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Happy Memorial Day, everybody. I'm a little intimidated because to my right, the first guest that we've had that has chose to do the Lefko stand.
The Lefko stand.
Peter King is invading my territory.
I don't even
doing your thing.
You're I doing know. This. I don't this even like we made stick. Him like listen to the intro. I was like, Peter's so big.
What
I'm
is
like,
that music?
That is actually created by Rod Simba, who is one of our listeners, who is a music producer.
It's pretty good, right?
He's pretty good. I think it's very good.
It is. Yeah. We were impressed. Rod Simba has done a lot of good work for us. Yes. For free of charge.
Nice.
It's been amazing.
Rod's the man. Him and all his producers have been hitting me up.
So, first thing I want to ask Peter King is this. We text from time to time.
Okay.
When he wants to answer yes, he replies with a meow.
Yeah.
Meow.
Well, and excuse me?
Yes, meow.
I say
like,
meow.
I'll be like, hey, can you be here at 2:10?
Meow.
Is that a Super Trooper thing?
Yes.
That's what I thought it was. Okay.
Now, that is the funniest scene in all of television movie history.
Yes.
Movie history?
I think so. Well,
this is coming from the guy who thinks Ace Ventura is the best movie in history.
Ace Ventura 2.
Oh, sorry. So how dare he ask you?
Ace Ventura is pretty funny.
Thank you very much.
Ace Ventura.
You're on the outside. Look at it now.
No, he's saying it's one of the best movies ever.
I'm not saying that it's one of the best movies.
Right.
I think it's one of the funniest scenes, at least Super Troopers, just because, you know, I've never heard meow heard said so many different ways in so many like normal sentences.
Also because it's finding comedy in a traffic stop.
Yeah,
where
and
you
it was
all,
pretty
you,
darn funny.
I almost want the police like to kind of mess with me.
Be
that's
like, hard. Yeah.
What were you speeding meow?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And they're coming out with a new one too, aren't they?
They have a new one out, and I want to see it.
Yeah,
apparently
it's out, huh?
Yeah.
Right. So we're recording this on a Wednesday. It's coming out on a Monday because look, we're taking over Monday Morning Quarterback. So
that's what
Sims and Lefko Monday Morning Quarterback
with Peter King.
Yeah. Is what you're going to wake up on Monday and it's going to be.
Well, you know what? I'm going to wake up on Monday morning and I'll be in Paris, France.
Wow.
Stop.
I'm taking my wife there for her 60th birthday.
Good for you.
What were Mondays typically like for you guys during Monday Morning Quarterback?
Or Sunday nights.
Yeah, because Sunday nights, you were just telling us you were doing what?
Well, I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan and we were talking about how incredibly noisy it is at all hours of the day or night in Manhattan, and so I'll be writing there at 3:30 in the morning on Monday, and there will be people leaning on their horns at the stoplight in front of my building, and I just think to myself, it just never ends in New York.
No,
but Mondays will be about the same thing. I'm going to do the same thing basically for NBC that I'm doing for SI and the MMQB right now.
All nighters, like I mean, where
I
like,
do, I'm up until about I'd say 5:30 normally on Sunday night.
So I like to think of it like this. So you're up until 5:30 in the morning on Monday. You release this like opus of like thousands of words and all these nuggets. And then do you sleep as the rest of the world is like processing your information?
I mean, I try to sleep as much as I can, but usually I'm up by about 10.
So Twitter's exploding and Peter King is napping.
I have to.
That's awesome.
How can you?
I just like the visual.
You can't stay up. You know, you got to go to sleep. But I mean, I do it a little bit less, and I hope that the column will consistently be up at NBC. This year we had it consistently up at the MMQB at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And because, look, I mean, I think at some point it becomes a little bit defeatist when you go and go and go, because after a while you just can't really reason properly. You know, so I try to be done. I really try to be finished by about between 4 and 5 o'clock last season. And hopefully I'll do the same thing this year at NBC.
So you're telling me you have so many things that you're probably chopping stuff that doesn't even make it, or else it could be. What happens to those stories?
Well, there aren't a lot of those. I often will save something for my Wednesday column.
Gotcha.
But I'm not going to do that now because I'm not doing a Wednesday column at NBC.
Feel good?
It'll feel pretty good. I love what I do. I'm really fortunate to do what I do.
Sure.
I'm tremendously fortunate to do what I do. So this isn't about I hate my job. I don't hate my job. There's probably only one thing I sort of hate now. Okay.
What is that?
And sort of hate meow. it's that in May, June, and July, you know, you finish working on the draft. And many times I'll have been at somebody's draft and I'll be in the draft room. And then like last year with the 49ers,
right.
You know, Thursday night after the draft, you go and have a few beers. Friday night, you might have a couple of beers.
Yeah.
You know, and then so you stay up with these guys, you stay out with these guys. And then you fly home and you take a deep breath and you say, oh. Now we got to populate the site for the next 10 weeks
right.
with something sort of meaningful.
Yes.
And I just said, man, it's too much for me. I mean, I had two brothers who died young.
Mm.
And I'm 60 years old. I mean, I love my job. I love my column. I love doing that stuff. I'm not crazy about it in May, June, or July,
right,
honestly.
We get it.
Me and Sims have realized working together for the last 5 seasons that our time to take vacation has been changed and changed and changed. At first it was, okay, right after the Super Bowl. And then it was, you got to be ready for the draft.
Yeah.
So, okay, we'll do it after
the draft.
And
we got the combine coming.
And then the draft right. happens and it's just OTAs have become like a monumental thing. And then
but you
franchise
know what's stupid
tags.
About? I can tell you what's stupid about that. Like OTAs and off-season practices.
Yes, we just, yes, go ahead.
I often
call it, whoa, big off-season.
I often have made this point about if a quarterback doesn't throw at the combine. I said, I have never one time in my life on the night of the draft heard a general manager say, well, we didn't take John Doe because he didn't work out at the combine.
Yes.
It doesn't happen. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
People say, oh, he's not competitive. Oh, that is a bunch of bull crap. And it's the exact same thing now with, oh, Tom Brady is missing these practices. I mean,
I
so what?
That one seems
so
weird.
I know, so
it's weird.
It's weird.
It is weird.
It is,
no
but it
question
matter.
About it.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird. And it's very un-Brady-like.
Right.
But I can guarantee you that when football starts
yep.
in September, if Tom Brady is healthy and he's 20% less the player this year, I will be utterly shocked. He's not.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, I think, is experiencing, and I don't know anything about this because I have not talked to him, but I think Tom Brady is experiencing what a normal human being about to turn 41 with 3 young kids and the ability to do things all over the world would experience. I mean, I'm going to go and practice football in Foxborough instead of going to do all these things, both with my kids, my family, in Qatar, in China, in wherever. And it just seems to me that he says, can I please have a little bit more of a life than I've had?
I get
That's
it.
How I look at it.
I look
you know?
And I do think there's real, there's, well, I mean, I know there's little issues there. I know
yes,
that.
Yes, there must be.
Yes, there is. I mean, yeah. I mean, from everything I know, bits and pieces, do I know this story 100%? But it seems like pretty much that Belichick was pushing on the organization that maybe this should be Brady's last year and Garoppolo should be the guy for the future. Brady got wind of that, didn't like it, and of course then it was Garoppolo got traded and all those things. I don't ever get the full story. You know how New England works. I know a few people up there. I get little bits and pieces, and that's just the part I've tried to piece together. But I'm with you, too, with, first of all, who's practiced more than Tom Brady? We both know he's obsessed with the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, he's making videos about him doing it in the offseason. So we know he's obsessed. They also have they're in the AFC Championship game every year. You know what that is? An extra month to practice for Tom Brady.
Sure.
So he can throw a slant route and a comeback with his eyes closed. And just a few years ago, we saw the players lockout. And what did we see? Three quarterbacks throw for 5,000 yards? So that just tells you OTAs, again, are more for the coaches than anything. Because I think they're.
How do you think the San Diego Chargers feel about the OTAs right now when Hunter Henry, guy who.
Los Angeles Chargers.
When Hunter Henry basically now is lost for the season.
Yeah.
And look, if you're going to be running around, you're going to risk injury. I'm not blaming anybody or blaming anything. But what I am saying is that, in my opinion, you're asking an awful lot of these players to be practicing sort of like they'd practice during the season, only not hitting the guy across from
him.
I tell you my conspiracy theory about the Patriots?
Yeah.
My conspiracy theory is that Bill went into Kraft's office and was like, Robert Kraft, I think it's time that we move on from Brady and we go to Garoppolo. And then Kraft had Brady in and said, just so you know, because I love you, Tommy boy, we're going to move on to Jimmy Garoppolo, and then saw the emotion in his face. And then I think Belichick's been taken out of this completely.
Here's the reason why I don't buy a lot of what I've heard with theories like that.
Yeah.
Now, what you said is very interesting, and I have no idea if it's true or not. It's not anything that I've heard enough about to even report. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is Bill Belichick has brought in so many veterans over the years, and he's all about winning. That, and I'm not saying that it's impossible that he would have said, okay, Brady, it's over, we're going with Garoppolo.
Right.
In the middle of an MVP year for Brady, which would have really imploded everything,
I agree.
I think you have to just let all of this play out. Mm-hmm. You've got to let Brady keep playing, and then we'll see what happens. And I just, look, this is just my fervent belief. The Patriots didn't take a quarterback this year because after Baker Mayfield, they didn't really like anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the quarterback from LSU is Matt Cassel reincarnated.
Right.
They might be able to get him coached up to play a little bit, but he's probably nobody's quarterback of the future. But he's nice. He's a Jacoby Brissett type of player, at least in their eyes. So next year, I believe that Josh McDaniel's job during this offseason, they fly into Miami on a Saturday. Josh, instead of putting his feet up and watching the Oklahoma-Nebraska game on TV on Saturday night, he's going to have some video that he'll, before he goes to bed, he'll spend the last 90 minutes before he goes to bed watching whatever that quarterback's name is at Missouri.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I know. I can't think of his name
and
either.
And whoever else those
guys are.
So he is going to be – this is his job now.
Mm.
Josh McDaniel's job in 2018
finding the next
will
Brady.
Be to spend 90 minutes every week on getting ready for the next guy. Man. That's my feeling about how they're going to operate.
I love it.
I don't doubt that. I mean, my experience of being there, I'm sure they already have a few guys, on their radar that are circled
they're
to be
those
type of
ahead.
Guys. Yes, they are.
Are we?
Wait, can I ask one more thing?
You can ask whatever you want.
Oh, okay. I'm just interested because just to bring back to something you said a few minutes ago about like coaches now and you hanging out in the draft and having a beer and things like that. Now compared to, let's just say, 1988, right? Oof. Our coaches, were they more willing to have a drink with you and hang that way? I feel like they were, right?
Okay. No question.
All right, so can you just like elaborate on that? Not that you have to use specific coaches.
In 1984, I covered football for the first time. I covered the Cincinnati Bengals. In training camp in 1984, I lived it at Wilmington College where the Bengals training camp was. That was the year where Boomer Esiason was a rookie. Chris Collinsworth was on the team. Munoz, Max Montoya. They had Reggie Williams. They had a lot of really good and really outgoing. Ray Horton, a lot of really outgoing players. And the one thing I will never forget, that dorm, okay, there's whatever 80 or 90 players in training camp.
Yeah.
That was the players' dorm. I had a room on the bottom floor with the Cincinnati Inquirer, and I had a phone in my room. And every night, the guy for the Cincinnati Post went home, but I stayed. So my room was open. So I remember many nights. The reason I had a really good relationship and ended up having one with Esiason and with Chris Collinsworth, I will always believe is because I said, hey, you want to use my phone? Come on in. And, you know, obviously no cell phones in those days. And there's two pay phones.
And everyone's trying to use them, I'm sure.
And so so they came by to talk to whoever, girlfriends, family, I don't know. And I would just leave the room and I'd do something else and they'd be on the phone for an hour or something like that. But here's the one other thing.
Yeah.
Five doors down the hall on the right-hand side was Sam Weich's suite. He lived in an RA's room at Wilmington College.
Hilarious.
And Sam Weich was a rookie coach with the Bengals, and he said, if you ever need anything, just knock on my door. So meetings would be over at like 9:30, and I'd go knock on his door, and I'd say, hey, can you explain your offense to me? And we'd sit there for an hour and 10 minutes until he was too tired to go anymore, and he'd show me film of everything that they did on offense. It was frigging
amazing.
Awesome.
Right.
It was just
Sam
awesome.
So where did it change? Why did it change? You know, what's
because,
your theory
because,
there?
Because
yes.
In the year 2000, I always tell people this story. In the year 2000, I went to the NFL scouting combine. It's like me, John Clayton, Rick Gosselin, Len Pasquarelli. There's hardly anybody there. There's maybe 15 to 20 reporters at the NFL scouting combine. This is the year 2000. This year, 1,243 credentialed members of the news media in Indianapolis.
So it's the sheer number?
Yes.
Because more people are covering it.
Yes, more than ever. And
the trust tree has been broken because of that? Or
I don't. Hey, you know.
Because I would think they would still want to have beers with somebody like you. But
occasionally
I like
they do. But yeah, it's not nearly as often as it was. And Chris, I'm going to tell you, this is one of the other things that is really different about covering football.
Yeah.
You know, you realize after a while that if you sort of are close to a guy, that guy pretty much expects you to only write good things about him. Mm-hmm. Okay?
When did that start?
Oh, it's been that way for a while. Mm. But I'll tell you what happens. Because if you're a big star, either as a coach or a player, and your team is winning all the time, or you're throwing for 5,000 yards every year, you're a great player, you know that there's a lot of people who are never going to write anything bad about you. Mm. So let's just say I write something bad about you. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, because you've got all these other big people in the media who are, I'm not saying kissing your feet, but who are always writing nice things, then all of a sudden, somebody who writes something that you really don't like, all of a sudden you're marginalized and you're on the outside. Mm. And that has happened, I don't want to say a lot, but that's happened 10 or 15 times with me over the last few years. And I can see it coming. I know it's going to happen. And I've told some players, please just understand that one day I really might write something bad about you. I'll give you a good example, Deion Sanders.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so Deion Sanders, when he signed with Washington at the end of his career, they gave him a $7 million signing bonus.
That was a crazy offseason.
And
Bruce Smith got a big contract.
He was not whole
at all
at that time.
At all.
And like their second game, they go to Detroit. He screws up his foot, which I think was already hurt, or his ankle.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just wrote basically that and I'm paraphrasing this because I don't remember exactly what it was, but Deion Sanders stole the signing bonus from Washington, from Dan Snyder and Vinny Serrato. And so I went in later that year, and Deion and I requested a chance to talk to Deion before some game. And the PR guy came back and said, Deion said, God bless you, but I'll never talk to you for the rest of my life. Now, we do talk now, but I knew him so well. I wrote this the other day. I know him so well that he gave me his pseudonym for road hotels.
Right.
And so I would know. You wouldn't call the hotel. In those days, people wouldn't have cells. So you just call the hotel and say, hey, can you connect me with John Doe?
Right.
Yeah. You know? And so, and that's how close I was to him then. But
what was it? John Thompson?
I always know.
Carl Langford?
I just always know that
tell
at
me it
some
was Peter
point,
King.
I always know that at some point, these things are probably going to blow up.
Yeah.
They just are, because if you're being remotely honest with your readers, sometimes you have to say things that are not very nice.
Right.
So. Because you have two relationships. You have a relationship with the player and you have a relationship with the reader. Speaking with, what is your relationship with your Twitter handle? Are you going to change it?
Because I have to, because it's SI_Peter King.
What are we going to go with?
I don't even know. I got to figure
it
out.
Can I give you some Lefko PR?
Ahead. Yeah.
You don't need NBC in there. You're Peter King. Someone might have Peter King. I think there is a guy.
There's a bunch of fake Peter Kings out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that you need to put an adjective that you believe in before Peter King. The honorable Peter King, great Peter King.
How about Peter King Meow?
That would be. It might blow up the internet. Seriously.
As long as you credit Sims and Love, calm down. Peter King Meow.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
I like Meow Peter King.
Yeah,
Peter
like
Meow
that.
King.
Yeah.
I think these are all good. So you guys are you're going to be kind of on the same rotation NBC Pro Football Talk.
We're working for the same team, I enjoy Peter. Conversations even outside of football, we've had some good ones as of late that I've enjoyed, and I won't go there right now. But Peter, too, he's taken a lot of pressure off me with my NBC job.
How come?
Well, I used to be worried. You okay there?
I almost broke the studio.
I used to be worried about being on time, but... Peter King, first show. Now, this is just tells you how awesome and big time this guy is.
Are you about to out Peter King?
Well, nobody. I don't have to out him. It was on TV.
I was a couple of minutes late. Yeah,
first show on NBC.
I did a walk on.
He did a walk on. Mario called it the Merv Griffin walk on, which is a little. I know who Merv Griffin is. I didn't realize that went on his shows back in the old days.
Yeah, people just walked on.
That was amazing. You're my idol to do that to Florio. The show starts at 7. They said the day before, man, Peter might be late for the show. And I'm got the show on because I'm going, let me see if Peter's there on time. And I turn on a few minutes late.
I'm just
going to
say this
yet.
Right now. Yeah. It's 6:39 a.m. I was at the Starbucks on the first floor of 30 Rock.
What?
6:39.
That's how long the line was?
And I walk in there. There's only four people there. But there's one person who's the barista and the ringer-upper.
Oh, I know.
And the person in front of me ordered 9 drinks.
What? That shouldn't be allowed.
I would leave.
And so, well, I couldn't because I was desperate for the, I was jonesing.
How are you
going to
write your coffee nerdness column? Yeah, I know you need
but
it.
But anyway, yeah, I can't do that anymore. So
oh, please
it
do
out.
It more. That was the best. That was awesome. Yeah. He can't do anything to you.
So I
you
should do 7:08. 7:08.
7:08. Peter Kidd.
It's like baseball games. Started at 7:11. That's when you start. New start time.
Doesn't one baseball team actually start at 7:11? I think it's the Chicago White Sox.
Because they sold it to 7:11.
Yeah.
That's
marketing.
Kind
of funny.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That's good to know.
I did not know that. Hey, can I just say one other thing?
You can say whatever you want. Well, okay. We're going to continue to ask you questions until you tell us
you're
sick
good.
Of us.
I'm ready to go for
did
a long
time.
Did
you have a pseudonym in a hotel?
No.
Okay, you're just Peter.
He wanted to say one more thing.
I'm going to say one more thing. So today, now that this is appearing on Monday, so as we record this, we're recording it on the previous Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I left home... and I'm finishing up today my favorite stories that I've done in 29 years at SI.
Ooh.
And it's really, really been interesting to go back and look at a bunch of the old things. Like something I haven't thought about in a long time is I took a bus in 1990. I took a bus across country with John Madden.
Hmm.
And
that would be amazing.
It was awesome. It was awesome. Like, we stopped on the side of the road one time, and he opens a drawer and he pulls out a book, Wildflowers Across America.
What?
And he goes, look at those things. There were bright red flowers. We were on the side of the road in Kearney, Nebraska.
Right. And I worked in Hastings, Nebraska, 40 minutes from Kearney, Nebraska.
Right on 80,
it's flat. There's nothing there. Wow, that's ridiculous.
But it was great. And the other thing about Nebraska is, right along the side of I-80, not far from Kearney and not far from where we saw those flowers, some guy has a farm where he invents animals, where he crossbreeds animals.
Jeez.
And they're just standing out there like the llama horse. And I mean, just the weirdest things going on at that thing. But anyway, so Madden was awesome. He was so much fun.
You slept in the bus, too?
I slept in the bus.
And so he had his bed in the
Madden
back?
Madden had the back third of the bus.
Right.
He had a queen-size bed. The room, it looked like a miniature Hyatt suite.
Yes.
It was beautiful. Right. And he also had, in those days, he had a TV in there, and he had all the tapes that week. I think he was doing Giants in Dallas. So he had all their games
right there.
Right. And so he was just going to watch them, and that's how he fell asleep.
Did he drive the bus?
No.
Who drove
the
bus?
He had two drivers.
Okay.
Dave Hahn and Willie Yarbrough. Dave, one of them has died. I forget which one. But they would have shifts, and then they had a little bunk in the middle of the bus. And It was great. But what a paradise. I am going through all of my stories right now and seeing all these things and seeing, you know, being at Favre's house till 11:30 at night in the week in the life of the Packers in 1995.
I saw you write about that a little bit,
And then, not knowing
that he was addicted to drugs at the time,
Not knowing at all.
Right.
And then after that season, that was an amazing thing that happened after that season with him basically going into rehab for the second, as it turns out, I didn't even know this, that he had been to rehab 2 years before for that, for the pills.
Right.
Then he went into rehab again, and then the third time he went in for alcohol, because that became like, after he stopped doing the pills, then he really was into alcohol. The most amazing thing about that whole time doing that, as I look back on it now, is that I only wrote 4,200 words. I spent a week inside. I'm in with Holmgren as he's doing the game plan. I'm in with Steve Mariucci and Ty Detmer as Favre is farting and falling asleep in the quarterback meeting room. It was
classic.
Really great.
Right.
And so I said, 4,200 words, man. I can't even. I write travel notes that are 4,200 words long now. Man. And so that's what has changed a lot. And that's one of the reasons why I've really grown to love the internet, because there isn't a limit if you've got a great story. And the last thing I'll say about this.
You can keep going. I love this stuff.
The last thing I'll say, because you'll get a great kick out of this. I'm going to have like maybe 15 or 18 stories with a little writing about here's what I remember about each one. But I did one of them from 2003 about a Montclair Cedar Grove softball game that my daughter pitched. It was a 13-inning game.
Right.
And she and one of her best friends in the world, who's from Cedar Grove and who was a pitcher, they met having pitching lessons. And so they went at each other like dogs for 13 innings.
Right.
And it was really one of the great sports events I've ever seen in my life. But so, and you know, everybody says, oh, keep that crap out of there. But that's really what I have totally gotten into over the years with the internet column, because they said, put some of yourself in it.
Yeah.
And so I did. I put that stuff in there. I put stuff about my dogs. You know, I got two dog obituaries in there.
Picking up dollars at Greenwich Ave.
Yeah,
the
I do. You're talking about Greenwich, Connecticut.
Right. And coffee, beer, your favorite liquids.
It's fun. But the other thing, so I've written over the years, I think I wrote this the other day, I've written about 5.5 million words in 29 years at SI and at the MMQB and SI.com.
How many dollars per word?
But so what I did at the end of trying to figure out how many words I had written is how many words I've written like in the MMQB, you know, in that Monday column.
Right.
And it's about 4 million.
Gosh.
And
I'm like 80%.
I'm mind boggled by that, because that's basically 40 novels.
Damn.
I mean, so I don't know. I mean, and the last week or so, it's been such an emotional time for me leaving there, because the amount of letters, like I got 600 emails last week from people just basically telling me stories about, you know, where they have read it over the years. And some guy on a subway came up to me a couple of weeks ago and he says, hey, good luck to you. I've read you. You were basically my introduction into football. You know, I've been reading, and here's a guy in a business suit and a briefcase going to work. He's whatever, 30 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it's been kind of an emotional time.
I was going to say, like, when you create something and you build something, and then we all know eventually, we don't think about it, that you're going to have to hand it over eventually. Because the fact that you've created something that needs to live without you there shows the foundation that you built.
And I'll tell you this, Adam. Here's the one thing that I felt strongly about over like the last year. So in the old days at Sports Illustrated, I never asked, hey, I'm going to go to San Diego and interview Dan Fouts. Well, okay, just go. Nobody would care.
Yeah.
It was not a big deal. But now every trip you make has got to be approved. Everything you do, you got to be worrying about money. And so I'd be doing these things, and I just kept thinking to myself, you know, there are nine people, average age 30 years old, who I have brought in. I brought in actually six of them, and we've gotten three from Sports Illustrated who help us do stuff and who write. And these nine people, average age 30, I mean, I hate to say it, but I'm like the 800-pound gorilla. And as long as I'm there, I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to be doing that. And I'm going to be highlighted when I do this. And you know what? They're ready. Like, Jenny Varentis is ready.
She's been killing it.
She is great. Robert Klemko is great.
Yeah.
Connor Orr, another one of our young writers. Andy Benoit, Albert Breer. These are really, really good people at their jobs. And if I stay, it just basically keeps them on the periphery a lot of the times. And it really was not fair.
The piece that I saw on MMQB today about the tables and lighting arrangements was incredible. I'm only kidding. When you go to MMQB, it's the furniture website.
Oh, oh yeah, that is right.
That's been my number one question I had for you is how
the hell is this furniture store still owning MMQB? Well, this is a very interesting story. For people who don't know, we started the MMQB in 2013. And we just wanted it to call it MMQB. There's a furniture company in North Carolina, and I think we offered them like $25,000 for the name, you know, to give up MMQB and to be something else. And they said no. And they asked for $500,000.
Holy crap.
What?
And so I said, I have a good way to fix this.
Right.
Just say, listen, we're going to have MMQB in our title. I have no idea what they would have paid 30 or 35, but I said, don't do it.
Yeah.
That's dumb. That's a stupid waste of money.
Right.
Here's what we should do. Just put a "the" in front of it.
Mm.
And that's what we did. So the website was known as the MMQB, and my Monday column was known as
the
just MMQB.
Yes.
And so it worked out fine. And it really, I guess, I don't know this, one of the business guys in our office said that the guy was really pissed off in North Carolina because
that was people, his cash cow.
Well, people would he'd be getting all of this traffic and he'd be getting all these contact us. What the hell? Where is the football? Where is Peter King? I don't get it. And he'd have to answer all these emails and he was that's all pissed amazing. Off about it.
Good.
So anyway, yeah.
I should eat that.
Because that to me has been the most fascinating thing is the first time I went on, I was like, man, a football only website. Like, I'm so excited. And I type it on and it was like, furniture?
What am North I doing? Carolina furniture.
I love that he was like, I'm going to cash in, but instead all he got was a ton of contact us asking where you were. I love that.
I mean, who knows how many he got, but that's what I heard.
Man.
What do we want to do? Do we want to go future? I'm always, you know me, I always want to ask about the past. That's
what you love the past.
I love the past because he has great history. I could sit here and listen to his stories about all that. But I also
I got to tell you one story about your father.
Okay, yes. Tell me.
Big Phil Sims, future Hall of Famer.
Big fucker. Big Phil.
One of the things that was really interesting is the year that the Giants won their second Super Bowl with Parcells against the Bills, the crazy game with Hostetler playing.
Yep.
So Phil Sims gets hurt on a Saturday afternoon against the Buffalo Bills in December.
Right. Rainy day.
Breaks his foot or
breaks
something.
It.
Yeah, breaks his foot. Mm-hmm. And so he's gone. And Parcells used to have this thing, okay, every year where he used to say, I don't want the injured players to be around. And it was so strange because you'd think to yourself, I would want Phil Sims in the quarterback meeting room talking to Jeff Hostetler and giving ideas about, you know, I just prepared to play the Buffalo Bills a month ago.
Right.
And I would like to have him around but not Parcells.
Yeah, right.
Parcells didn't want those guys around. So every night they'd be going into meetings. And I forget what day it was. It might have been Monday, might have been Tuesday, might have been Wednesday, I forget. But so I saw Phil and he goes, hey, you want to go out to dinner? And so we went out to dinner at Burns Steakhouse in Tampa and had a great meal. And
everybody, Burns is a classic.
Everybody in the restaurant is walking by the table and they're saying, Phil Sims is here. His team's in the Super Bowl. What is he? Isn't his team involved with something? And I don't think they understood that Parcells doesn't really want. He thinks the broken foot is going to rub off on people, you know.
Oh wow!
And so we sat there probably for it wasn't for any story. We just sat there and talked for like 2.5 hours and had a really fun time. But
did you guys take the wine tour too?
No,
the birds. Okay, because it's phenomenal.
They got a good list. The thing, you know, the one thing I really remember about that, and remember about your father, that was really cool as a, you know, as somebody covering the team, you know, and he got really pissed off at me one time for quoting him when he thought it was off the record.
Right.
Long story, not that interesting. And so, but I used to love just talking to him about, you know, the way the game really worked. And he had a great handle on the way the game really worked. And you know what was interesting? He had there was a lot of guys on those Giant teams that didn't really buy into Parcells because he had different rules for Lawrence Taylor than anybody.
Yes.
His whole rule, his big rule with Lawrence Taylor is, let's keep this guy alive.
Yeah.
Okay? Because if he's alive, he's going to win some games for us.
Right.
Okay, so let's just keep him alive and forget if he's 10 minutes late.
Yes.
You know, so guys like Joe Morris used to get so angry with the way Parcells treated Lawrence Taylor. But anyway, Phil had such a great handle on every aspect of the team, why it worked, why it didn't work, what happened, the relationships, and everything like that. It was he was a really good quarterback to cover.
Well, football philosophy, I mean, I think that's where Parcells and Belichick are amazing, right? It's just the philosophical, can see the whole game as a whole and how it all plays into each other. It's interesting with the injury thing, right? Because I played for Josh McDaniels, and that was my first taste of that, right? Because New England does the same thing still to this day. If you're hurt, don't come around, because you're not going to help us win on Sunday. And we don't want you in a meeting room because you're not worried about the game, maybe going off on a tangent and telling a story about it has nothing to do.
Well, one
so
of the
they
things,
think it's like confusing the
one
focus.
Of the things that used to, one of the things that used to enrage, Parcells would go to these new teams. And I wrote about it one time in Dallas, his last stop, you know, when he went to Dallas.
Yep.
The players were saying they'd go into the trainer's room, you know, and they would feel like it was like late August or September, it'd be real hot outside.
I know.
It would feel fantastic. You'd go in there, it'd be really cold, but after about 5 minutes, players would say, "Hey, man, turn this air conditioner off." Because Parcells would have it at 60 degrees.
He'd make it so cold.
He'd make it so. He didn't want you hanging around
in
there.
Right.
He didn't want people in there.
He did that stuff with the Giants, too.
And,
I know.
You know, the one other thing, and I only remember this because I wrote about it today. So you guys might remember this streak, but in 2004, I think. It might have been 2003, but 2004, I believe it was. The Patriots were going for their 19th consecutive regular season win,
right,
which would be an NFL record at the time. Nobody had ever won 19 in a row. And so that week, I went up there and I was going to do what makes the Patriots tick. And people were writing about the Patriots because they had won a couple of Super Bowls. But, you know, still, you know, just get on the ground, get in the weeds, find out. And I get up there, and I'm talking to Mike Vrabel, and he goes, "Well, Vrabel was a linebacker there at the time." He goes, "You should look into what Belichick said to us this week in our team meeting when he met us."
So he didn't tell you. He said for you to look
better,
into it.
Yeah, because these guys are really
so
careful.
Scared.
They're scared.
It's hilarious.
So, I find out that what Bill Belichick said to his team, here they are, they're going for 19 in a row, you know, national TV game against Miami. It's going to be a huge win. If they win, celebrations, everything like that. And he gets in there, and they had just beaten Buffalo on Sunday. And he goes in, and he stands in front of the team, and he goes, "Hey, if we want to be any good at all, we got to clean up this special teams crap that I'm seeing out there. You realize against Buffalo, we had zero return yards. We allowed them this. And he goes over everything. And the guys in there, is one of them said to me, he goes, "We were worthless pieces of S." And that to me sounded so familiar, because Bill Parcells always had this theory. And his theory was, if you've won 18 in a row, find something crappy.
Yeah.
Because you can't tell them we've arrived. Right. It's October. Right. It's whatever it is. Right. We got a lot of work to do.
Right.
Similarly, if they've lost 4 in a row, you've got to tell them that hope is not lost. Hey, listen, I saw some good things out there.
Yeah.
Here's what we do well, and here's how we're going to win this Sunday. And that's exactly what Belichick was doing at the time, telling them how bad they were on special teams. So that, and their gunner, their punt team gunner,
right.
A guy named Sean Mayer,
yeah.
He fired him that day. And I wrote like that. It was like Paulie Walnuts executing a contract hit. He had to sacrifice somebody.
Yeah.
And so he did, and he came in, and everybody knew, holy crap, we've won 18 in a row, and our special teams guy just got whacked.
Well, I know, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
So see, this is what happens. I want to ask him more questions about history. So you go like, okay, so are they as good as you've, like Parcells and Belichick, just to me, and I know you know more coaches than me over a lifetime and being around them, just seem, from my 37 years on the planet, to be the best at the mental warfare that goes on in football than anybody I've seen or at least witnessed on the outside.
See,
in.
Parcells, the reason why, and this is the reason, and look, I'm kind of close to Parcells, so people would always say, oh, you only want him in the Hall of Fame because he's been good to you, you're close to him. Listen, Bill Parcells coached 4 teams in the NFL. Every team was a piece of crap when he got there.
That's right.
And every team he took to the playoffs.
Like within 2 years, it was like, wow, okay, right.
And so, I mean, Rich Kotite is 4-28 in his previous 2 years. Here comes Parcells, and all of a sudden they're competitive. But my only point about what makes a good coach is that I think there has to be, and nobody wants to hear this, and I think Mike Tomlin does this right now better than anybody except Belichick.
Hmm.
You've got to have this ruthlessness. Total, utter ruthlessness. And if you don't have that, you're going to need it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have it, it's over. You're not going to survive. And in my opinion, that's one of the things everybody, I think, like, some veteran players have left the Patriots after a year or two or three or whatever, and they breathe a sigh of relief, and they have two emotions.
Yeah.
Okay. One is, that was an incredible experience, and man, I got a ring.
Right.
You can never take that away from me. But with a few of them,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so glad I'm out of it.
Yeah, I know.
You know, because it is so incredibly mentally demanding.
Mm-hmm.
I have said this to people, you know, Seth Wickersham wrote a story at ESPN last year saying that, oh, there's all kinds of chemistry problems, Belichick, Kraft, Brady, it's not long for this world. And I said, hold on a minute. Eddie DeBartolo, Bill Walsh, Joe Montana, the greatest owner, coach, quarterback, trio,
yes,
maybe in history, they lasted 10 years. Kraft, Belichick, Brady.
And that wasn't perfect. People think that was perfect,
oh,
that
trio. Oh, my God. That was incendiary.
Yeah, right.
That
Thank
was
you.
Incendiary.
Right. People don't realize that was not pretty relationship there.
But and I'll tell you one thing about that in a second.
Please
But I'll tell you, in my opinion, this one is the most amazing one in NFL history.
Yeah.
I give Kraft credit for laying back when I'm sure there are some times where he didn't want to lay back. Credit to Robert Kraft. I give immense credit to Bill Belichick because he never stopped being himself.
Yeah. Ever.
And I give immense credit to Tom Brady because he wanted to be coached.
Yeah, right.
And every week he could take the piling on. And I think it's gotten to him a little bit now.
Yeah,
okay?
I'm sure.
Now, I think it has. I don't know. You got to understand, I do not have inside information on this.
We hear you. I've stated that too. Like the story I told you, I don't have all the facts. I just have been told the story a few times and I'm piecing it together.
Yeah.
So I hear you. Go ahead.
But the one thing I will say about this incredible time that, I mean, I'm 60 years old. If I live 30 more years, I absolutely guarantee I will never see a team like the Patriots. No. Never. And I've never seen one before.
Right.
The only one close is, and I wasn't alive for the vast majority of it, is the Cleveland Browns, because the Browns, in the first 10 years of their history, won seven NFL championships, and they lost in the friggin' seven pro football championships,
right. Yep.
Because 4 years was with the AFC. The first 6 years they were in the NFL, they were a team coming over from this junior league. The first 6 years, they were in the championship game every year.
Right.
And the stories about Paul Brown, when I read them, remind me a lot of Belichick. Ruthless. His coaches hated him. They never vouched for him. All
Belichick, right. Belichick worships Paul Brown.
There you go.
He worships Paul Brown. And this is a weird, weird thing to say, okay? Because the longer I'm away from it, the more I value it, okay? 1984, the first year I covered the NFL, I covered the Bengals, and we were talking before about Collinsworth and Esiason and all the great guys on that team who were really smart guys. But in training camp that year, Wilmington, Ohio, Central Ohio, you know, just every day, day after day after day, the sun beating down on you and two-a-day practices.
Yeah.
Every day.
I know.
9 to 11,
right.
3 to 5, pads.
I mean, I feel like
both
I'm old,
practices,
man, because that's
man.
The way it used to be for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to be like, back in my day, we did two-a-days every day in full pads.
And in that year, 1984, they had like a five-week training camp, and I will never forget this.
Wow.
Paul Brown was at every practice, and he never missed a minute. And Chris, one time, you know what I said to him?
Yeah.
I said to him, I mean, you're exhausted after a while to stand in the sun for that time. Okay, you have a hat on, you have sunscreen, but holy crap. You know, I always will say, I've had two melanomas in my life, and I attribute those both of them. Look at this. I had a big chunk taken out of my arm. I attribute that to standing outside in Wilmington, Ohio for 4 or 5 hours every day for like 6 weeks in the blazing sun. But I once said to Paul Brown, he was a teacher, and I would just ask him, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this?
Yeah,
just, and one time I said to him, Paul, does this ever get a little tiring for you? Man, every day we're out here, it's this. And he goes, young man, this is our lifeblood. And that's, I'm just telling you, if Bill Belichick would be like a little puppy if he could have lived in the time of Paul Brown. He would have loved Paul Brown. Right. They're the same guy.
We were talking this before just to kind of go on Belichick, because the reason I think everyone talks about Belichick, we've never seen a coach like this. He's at the top of the craft for this long. And in this era with free agency and all the change and players and social media, it's crazy. But what does Bill do after this?
Like, I don't know, but you know
what? Can he have a hobby? Is he gardening?
Chris educated me about something about Belichick that I never thought of before. He was on my podcast like a year ago, and we were talking about Belichick and his experience with him. And one of the things, and I'm totally paraphrasing this, was that, you know, like, he's the exact same. He's got the same mentality, the same level of stress. If you're in some personnel meeting in May about undrafted free agents.
Or the week of the Super Bowl.
As he is the week of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know.
It's the same.
So
in other words, I've always thought, I've been asking people in the last few months.
Yeah.
How much longer for Belichick?
That's my question.
You know, the people who. I just talked to somebody recently who knows Bill, who just says, I mean, I think he's going to do it at least 3 more years.
Yeah.
And because first of all, I don't think there's anything else other than maybe, you know, sailing on Nantucket that really kind of, no pun intended, floats his boat.
Yeah. I was going to say Bruce Springsteen, because everyone that I talked to, from your dad Doug Flutie, they say the happiest I ever see Bill Belichick is when he's seeing the boss. And I could see him just following Bruce Springsteen around the world.
I think
he's going to put out Belichick,
Bruce. Isn't he more of a Bon Jovi guy?
I think he's more of a Bon Jovi. It's Bon Jovi.
Is it both?
No, yeah, maybe Bruce, but I think it's Bon Jovi you're messing up.
He's going to follow John.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'll coach the Philadelphia Soul.
Right.
He'll really get into it. I don't know.
Wouldn't it be great to have John Bon Jovi as an owner in the NFL?
It would be.
Wouldn't it be fantastic?
The question is, how would he discipline the anthem? You know, because now
I was going to say some guy just bought the friggin' Carolina Panthers for $2.5 billion or so, whatever it is.
Yeah, $2.3 billion, I think.
And I just said there aren't a lot of people in the United States who have that kind of. And
he had
the amazing
cash.
Thing is he paid cash.
Cash.
It's, I mean, it's ridiculous. Just, I mean, ridiculous.
Come on.
All right, so we got to ask about that subject a little bit. Yeah. I mean, we're taping this on the Wednesday, the day of the anthem stuff goes on, and it's we're releasing this as a Memorial Day.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, what was your first thoughts there, just reading this? And
I wrote this maybe about, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
after the league meetings. I said, at the end of the day, the only thing that makes any sense to me is to tell players that there's potential discipline if you do anything on the sidelines. And if you don't want to stand, stay in the locker room.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they did. And I didn't know that, but right. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. And I'm not defending it because I am one of these really left-wing guys who says, if a player wants to kneel for the anthem, let him.
Yeah.
I've told this story countless times. Last year, I went to a Mets game at Citi Field, and national anthem comes up. I got a hat. Here we go. And I notice, like 4 or 5 rows ahead of me, there's a family sitting down. And I don't know that it was a family, but it was 4 people.
Right.
And they're just sitting there. And no one was, hey, get
yeah,
up,
right.
get
exactly.
up, get
this
up. It's just
the arguments I've made.
I mean, and so they're just sitting there, and the anthem ends, life goes on.
Mm-hmm.
They play the game.
Right.
Now, look.
I have experienced it, though.
You
like,
have?
At the Eagles parade. They played the anthem, and people had hats on. And I'm talking about other fans, like, getting in their face,
yeah,
threatening to fight
yeah.
them.
It's because the hat's on?
And I'm not going to lie. There was a 10-minute period where I was not excited the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It was just like this. It punched me in the face.
Yeah.
Where it was this debate, and you knew what they were arguing about.
For some reason, we have allowed, and again, since 9/11... I have a theory about all this, but I think since 9/11, we have allowed politics and patriotism
yeah.
to hijack the NFL.
To almost everything.
And I'm just going to say this. I could give two craps about what is played in the thing, in
right.
the, you know, and in the seventh inning stretch when I go to a baseball game, God bless America.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Right.
Play it. It doesn't matter one whit to me.
Yeah.
And I'll always stand for it. And when they introduce the guy who stands on the dugout, who's got an artificial
veteran,
leg,
right.
I mean, yes. I'm crying.
Yeah,
just
I'm
like,
with you. We're standing.
I mean, I love those guys.
Yeah.
But the fact is, we've gotten to the point in the United States where, you know, at all public athletic events, the only segment of our society that is celebrated is the military.
Yeah.
That's it. How about the teachers in Arizona,
right.
In Kentucky, who are I heard this story from this one teacher stood up in Kentucky, graduated from college, got her degree, and then went and spent borrowed more money to get a master's degree, and started off at this job teaching sixth grade somewhere in Kentucky at $29,600.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now she's been doing it. She's up to like $34,000 or some whatever the number is, but it's not a lot.
Right. No.
And I'm just saying to myself, these are the people who I want to celebrate. And I'm fine with celebrating the military. I truly am.
Yes.
I went on a USO trip in 2008, and I was in awe of those people. I think they're unbelievable. I don't think that they're the only people and the only segment of our society that we should celebrate week after week after week. How about firefighters? Could we please bring some firefighters out to stand at the 50-yard line before a game and
yeah.
for people to celebrate?
Right.
How about some cops? Could
yeah.
we have some cops out
right.
there? How about the iron workers who build these buildings? Come on.
Yeah. It's really a great point. I never thought about it, but you're right.
I am just tired. Of the only segment of society that we celebrate is the military. And I want to celebrate the military, but not at the exclusion of every other person who gets up at 5:30 in the morning every day, day after day after day, for years and gets underpaid at a vastly important job.
Yeah. Valid points.
That felt good.
It did.
Preach.
It did. I know. I want to go off with you badly. The other thing, too, like, so do you think there's going to be unintended consequences here? Or, you know, the fact that, again, that the NFL owners have done this without the approval of the players? Like, what do you think about that?
All I can say is no matter what Roger Goodell would have done, people would have said it was a
good
stupid
point.
Decision.
Yes.
Because Roger Goodell can't win. If they brought in... who?
Yeah, I feel
if they brought in, I can't even think of anybody. But if they brought in John Doe, a champion of industry, or let's say I got a good one. If they brought in like George Bush, the younger, obviously,
okay, right.
They brought in George Bush to be commissioner, and you know he's got a lot of people who maybe you didn't like him politically, but whatever. So he would make a decision, and whatever the decision is, he would have a honeymoon period. Mm-hmm. Whoever the next commissioner is,
right.
No matter what Roger Goodell decided in this case, people were going to boo him. That's it. That's the way it is in this league right now. And I'm not saying it's the right decision. It's the decision that, in my opinion, is the best one of a lot of evils.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I got you.
I think the only thing that's interesting is by having owners doing discipline, in my mind, they're out of the protection of Roger Goodell because Roger Goodell takes all that heat. But now if these individual owners are charged with disciplining, it's going to kind of out some of these guys in terms of where they stand instead of falling behind Goodell.
Here's where it went wrong, in my opinion. I think it went wrong in three different places. Number one, when Donald Trump said what he said,
yep.
The NFL should have come out instead of just two or three or four owners saying, I am proud of my team. I'm proud of our players. They should have attacked Donald Trump.
They should have.
They should have attacked Donald Trump and say, you have no idea what you're talking about, blah, 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 and whatever. So that's the one thing.
Right.
The second thing is that when this originally happened and the NFL said, we are going to meet with this group of players, Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan Boldin and a lot of really smart,
right.
responsible, very well-intentioned players. They said, okay, here's what it ended up being. We're going to give you $90 million over the next 7 years, and you guys have a committee and responsibly pick the social causes you want to support. That was a great thing to do. But it was so incredibly naive, in my opinion, because what the NFL owners thought is, we're going to give them this. They're going to see this is beyond goodwill. This is incredible. They're spending $13 million bucks every year of money that we're giving them to do whatever they want with their social causes, you know, and they didn't ask for anything in return. Well, what the NFL should have said is, listen, we're going to do something for you, but in return, we want something.
Mm-hmm.
D. Smith should have sat in those meetings.
Yeah.
Eric Winston should have sat in those meetings when possible, and they should have said, listen, here's what we're willing to do. We will support all these causes. We'll support them financially, and we'll support them with our teams. We'll do all this, but we have to take away this stuff that is dividing not only our team and our league, but in some ways our nation.
Yes, definitely.
We got to stop this. So let's figure out a way to do it, whatever that way is. Instead, the NFL just said, we're giving them $90 million. And they just expected the players to police it.
Mm.
And they didn't.
No.
And because it's not Malcolm Jenkins' job to tell Eric Reid, stand up.
Exactly.
I mean, it has to be done collectively.
Man.
I know.
I have a million more topics, but we've literally gone more than like twice as much as we thought we would.
Gosh.
What are we going to do now then? Are we going to do, meow?
Meow? Meow, I don't know what to do.
I think Blake Bortles. No, I'm just kidding. No, Peter, that was amazing, man. I appreciate
you. It was fun. Yeah, we had a good time.
What do you think of Bleacher Report's office?
It's beautiful.
It is. Like it? We have to show them the full tour. I don't think
we'll
get to see it.
You know,
yet.
I hate to do it, but I gotta go do something at 3:30. I thought I was gonna be here like 20 minutes.
I know, we hijacked you. Sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Peter King's amazing.
Great being with you guys. Thank you.
Do we know the Twitter handle? Do we know? Okay, so Peter King Meow coming soon. And then NBC, we can watch you on Pro Football Talk. So you can either watch Sims or King.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
and then eventually you're gonna kick
Chris is gonna do it a lot more than I am. I don't wanna get up. the part of this thing is living a sane life, not getting up at 6 o'clock to go do radio.
I was gonna say,
TV.
Take your life back. Yeah, but yeah, I will say yeah. that if you want to see a flustered Florio, know what days Peter's on.
It is
and
awesome.
At 7 o'clock, Florio's not gonna have any idea.
He doesn't.
What's
Florio doesn't bat an eye with me. He shows me no respect. But you,
I love it.
He's like a head coach with. Man, this is a star player in his prime. Yes, I don't know what to do with him.
It's Odell Beckham Jr.
It's Bill Parcells with Lawrence Taylor again.
Yeah, you are Lawrence Taylor
Lawrence
now.
Taylor.
It's all come full circle.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you for coming in. I want to say thank you for the 29 years and the countless stories and the 5.5 million words.
Yep.
It's been awesome. Thanks for always being a stand-up guy. Thanks to you guys, Sims and Lefko fans, for everything that you do. As always, hit us up on social at Sims and Lefko. Subscribe and as well as leave a comment on iTunes. We're nearing 1,000 five-star reviews, which is amazing. You guys are great. But Peter.
You're the king of Peters.
Come on.
Man, you were in an RV with John Madden. Awesome. Thank you, man.
All right.